As you know that we started the fast of St. Mary yesterday, so we wanted to talk about consecration in the life of St. Mary. When I say this word consecration, what comes to your mind? I just want you to use your imagination a little bit. When I say the word consecration, what comes to your mind? Maybe like a picture of a monk or a nun or a priest. How about you? Can you call yourself a consecrated person? Or would this be God's call for you or not? Are you too old or too young? Are you qualified, not qualified? Do you meet the criteria or not? Do you think about it or not? Single or married, whatever it is, what comes to your mind when we think about consecration? So I think there is a lesson that we learned from the life of St. Mary regarding this, about the life of consecration. As you know that she lived as a celibate and as married at the same time. She's the only one who lived both lives at the same time. Someone who's a celibate, a virgin, at the same time, she lived as, you know, a married, the marriage life. When the angel appeared to her, he gave her the good news to give birth to a son, the Son of God. And her only question was, how could this be, and I do not know a man? Well, you're betrothed, so you're supposed to get married and have children. But that wasn't the case. Why? Because there was something, there was a life of consecration in her heart and in her mind, regardless if she was betrothed or not. She didn't think of herself living just a normal life like anyone, but a consecrated life for God. She never thought herself to be married, and that was her only question. She didn't say, how, or I'm not qualified, or how come, or anything like this. Her only question, how could this be, and I don't know a man. She had a covenant of consecration with God, an everlasting betrothal with the Lord himself before she was betrothed to Joseph. She had an agreement with him. I want to live for you. I want you to be everything for me. I don't want anything else. That's why that was her only question. Did God change his mind? Did we change plan? And the angel, of course, told her that everything is okay and she doesn't need to worry about that. The call to consecration is a call in the heart. Is a call in the heart. God calls people in their heart, would you live for me? Being drawn by God's grace to enjoy him and to love him more than anything else, and to live for him and only for him. Regardless if I'm married or I'm not, if I'm working or I'm in a service or in ministry, it doesn't really matter, because the consecration is not a state of, it's not a marital status, but it is a state of the heart. And that's what I want to explain today. Where does the call come? How did it come to St. Mary? As you know, that she was consecrated, she was given to God by the age of 3. She spent her life in the temple. She had a lot of time of prayer. She had a lot of time of meditation. She had a lot of time of solitude. And usually, that's when the time of consecration comes. And without that, it's not really clear. Without this time of solitude, the time of retreat, the time of just being with God, and the call of consecration will be born from that time. Last week, we had an adventure. We had a trip for 35 junior high kids going to the monastery in Texas. was a big adventure, and we have a few of the martyrs here, you know, the servants who went with them, and Abuna Paul was with them. And I was really praying that God would put the seed of consecration in the hearts of these kids from young age. Because believe it or not, it comes from young age. I don't know when it came to St. Mary, but it's anywhere between 3 and 12. And it was so real. It was so sincere. It was so strong. And it was called for life. I remember when I was in high school, maybe college, early college, I went to a lot of retreats in the monasteries in Egypt. And when I say that, it was not as nice as here, that you ride, you know, plane and go to, you know. No, it had a lot of too much adventures, that you had to ride boats, maybe animals, maybe, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, back then, God knows how far with this, maybe 25 years ago or something. So things were not developed. It was very, very, very hard. Sometimes it was actually a big risk. It was like life-threatening risk. It's like to stay in the desert in the middle of the night, not knowing if you're going to have a ride or not. And this is the desert, like the eastern desert, where, you know, still there are lions and stuff like this. But, you know, we made it, thank God. But over there in these retreats, I heard a call from God to live for Him. And it was repeated and was strong every time I went to one of these retreats. I wasn't sure even if it was real or not, but it was repeated. Maybe I was inspired by the monks living there, but the call was strong. So at a certain point, when I couldn't resist, I went to my father of confession. I told him, I want to be a monk. Alas, I made my mind. And, you know, he was a good man and a wise man, and I never expected his reaction. He said, why? I said, what? He said, why? I never thought of this. I just wanted to do this. I think maybe, you know, I want to live for God. He said, go live for God. Who told you not to live for God? Go live for God right now. I said, maybe I want to be in a place where there is no distraction. How do you know that the monastery doesn't have distractions? It has more distractions than here. I said, maybe I want to pray more. I said, very good. Go close your room. Stay there. Pray as much as you want. Here you go. You can start right now. And in the end, he asked me a question. Do you really want to consecrate your life to God, or do you just want to put on some black clothes and that's what you really want? I said, I didn't really know. I don't know, maybe I'll pray about that. But it was actually a good challenge to see if I really want to live for God or I wanted a title. But I got the message and I understood consecration in a completely different way, that it's not where you live and it's not what you do, but it's the state of the heart. If you're really living for God or not. And it's something that we don't choose, but we are called for such a thing by the Lord Himself. Some people are put in very difficult situations. Some people are put in situations not by choice. Some people receive it in a misfortune, like Moses, who fled from Egypt and went to the desert for 40 years, escaping from Pharaoh, and the call came to him there. Some people received it in persecutions, whatever it is, or misfortune, or losing people. You know, like St. Paul, the first hermit, you know, when his parents died and he felt like there is nothing in life more than this. So after this conversation with my father of confession, I never said anything to anyone, and I kept this in my heart. I lived my life, a normal life, until at the right time that God gave me a wife who had exactly the same desires, and I was ordained And I can't say that this was my consecration. Why my consecration was back then when I was in high school, when God called me and said, live for me. And I said, I would love to live for you. But there is a temptation every day that I live for myself, whether I'm a priest or I'm not or anyone. There is a temptation to live for myself and live my own life and not to live for him. The moral of the story is that, as I said, regardless of what shape you are in, maybe you are called. Maybe you were called, but through so many distractions, you lost the strength of this call. Some people have the black robes, and they're not consecrated to God. They're not 100% living for him. They're maybe living for themselves or their own, but it doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter if they're single or they're married, but what's important is I'm at your disposal. Do whatever to me, but I'm yours. I want to live for you, and I want to live for your glory. And again, this is something that we don't choose, but it's a call that we respond to. The reason why I'm telling you this, because of two things. Maybe you were called back then and you forgot about your call, or you were distracted, and I want to touch base with that. And I'm talking also to you to understand how to help others who are being called. Maybe people that we serve in Sunday school. And I will explain. These kids could be 3, 4, 5 years old. How do I know that they have a real call, and how to help them with their call? So the story that I'm going to use quickly is the story of Samson. You know the story of Samson? He's one of the judges of Israel. He was a chosen by God. Actually, there is a lot of similarities between him and St. Mary. Both were called before they were born. Both their parents were barren. They were not... didn't have children, and God said, I'm going to give you a child that's going to be very, very special. Both are going to help save Israel. Okay? And Samson was called, and his parents were asked not to drink any strong drink because they have a Nazarite. Nazarite is the word for consecrated person. It's a word in the Old Testament. Nazarite. Nazarite, someone who is dedicated and consecrated for God. So, the Nazarite means set apart, separated, not like everyone else. And they were asked from his childhood that this boy should never do 3 things. Okay? And maybe if we have time, we can explain the 3 things. One of them is not to cut his hair. And not cutting the hair back then used to be a symbol of consecration. That's why priests, you know, let their beard, because it's growing the hair is a sign of consecration. So not to cut his hair or beard. One is not to drink any strong drink or any alcohol. And the third, not to touch anything that is dead. Meaning, if his parents die, he can't touch them. And of course, there is a meaning, and there is a lot beyond that. But anyways, even his mother was asked not to do these things while he was in her womb. It was an amazing thing. The reason why I'm saying that, because some people are called in the first hour, some people are called in the third hour, and some people are called in the 11th hour. Does it make a difference? Does it make a difference? Didn't they all get the denarii in the end? It doesn't matter when I was called, but I was called when I was called. You know, some people are called in the first hour, and then they take a long detour until they find themselves, and until they find their road back. So, as servants, it's very important for us, and hopefully parents would do that too, to know how these children are called from the young age. Because believe it or not, before we know them, someone else knows them. And he spots them. Who? The devil. He knows very well. And then he tries to put all the obstacles in their lives. Not only that, he would try to make parents an obstacle, church, anything. So our job is to understand that the early ones, the ones who are called earlier, and to nourish that, and to, you know, to give them something special. Same way that the parents of Samson were given instructions to deal with this boy differently. How can you have a boy who is 3 or 5 and his hair is long? How could he be different than all of his friends? How can they like make fun of him? No, make this boy set apart, separate, different than all the boys around him. It's okay. Teach him to do that from young age, that he's set apart, that he's different than anyone else. I'm sure he had a ton of questions for his parents. Why do I look different? Why can't I cut my hair? Why can't I do this? Why can't I eat this? Why can't I touch that? And the answer is, you are just different. You are different. You are set apart. Until he becomes comfortable with being different. Until he becomes comfortable with that. And believe it or not, sometimes when it doesn't come in the early years and in young age, it doesn't come after. It becomes very, very hard. How can I be different than anyone else? So our job is to nourish that and to cherish this call that in these people who are maybe, you know, and encourage that and follow up with them. The consecrated people, they are to live set apart for God. Not to drink wine or strong drink. What does that mean? To be always sober. To be always awake. One time, Samson was out of it, and he lost everything when he was drunk. And I don't mean the drinking literally, but to be sober. To understand that if I am called for such a thing, I can't just take it easy. I can't just relax. Why? Because I have a strong enemy. And I have a war stronger than anyone else. But that's not fair. Listen. With every consecration, there is grace and there is power. Do you think that Samson has the same strength as the rest of the kids? Or he as a kid can beat up 10 of them? Was he strong or not? He was strong. Did he have the power of God or not? He had the power of God. So why not? The problem, if we think about being set apart without the grace of God, without the strength, for example, when a little kid comes to his parents for Sunday school, I want to fast. Yeah, Habib, you can't fast. Your nourishment, your this, the protein, the calcium, all of this. If he really can, if he's not just saying that, if he really can, maybe that's the grace of God is given to him. Need some wise people to understand and nourish that. Come here. How can you do that? I can't fast like this. How can you do it? It's the same power that Samson received. It's the power of God. It's the grace of God. With every call, with every consecration, there is grace. So we can't underestimate that. And we cannot fulfill the 3 things, not to drink, not to touch, and not to cut the hair without having this strength and this power of God. Okay? So, just knowing and understanding the grace of God given. Example, St. Shenouda, the Archimandrite, who started like the monasticism. When Saint Anthony started the monasticism, every monk for his own in his own cave. When Saint Shenouda came, he made jewels, monasteries, and stuff like this, and he changed things, and monastic life like grew so much. How did he start? 9 years old. 9 years old. Would take his food, give it to other people or to the poor. He would fast till the evening every day. How? Who told him? Who gave him the power to do that? If you don't know what hungry kids are like, I can tell you, like, you know, they lose their mind and they make everybody around them lose their mind. Why? Because they're hungry. And sometimes they can't express it, so become, you know, nagging and mean, and they become crazy and they don't know why. It's like kids screaming. Why? They're hungry. Okay? So it's so strong with kids. But he can fast till 9 p.m. Who noticed that? His uncle. He was actually a monk, Saint Bigol. He said, really? You fast every day till the evening? Yes? Okay. I want you to come for retreats in the monastery. And he would take him, even though it's forbidden for kids to be there. So he would take him to his cell. There wasn't a monastery back then. Take him to his cell, was to stay with him for days. And notice him. And notice how he prays. And notice how he does things. He said, you're going to be great. You're special. You're called by God. Smart, wise man. In the end, Saint Shenouda became who he is. Saint Bishoy was the same thing. And the power of prayer that was given to him, it was said, his mother, watch, this boy is going to be special. So she prayed with him, prayed more and more. Like, you learn back then in the end of his life that he would spend all night in prayer. But you don't know that he prayed for hours with his mother as a young kid. Why? He had the energy. He had the power. She didn't have to beat him up that he, you know, would do that. No. God gave him the grace to do that. With every consecration, there is grace given, like the power that was given to Samson. To be set apart. To have strength above others in certain areas. And everybody is given something in a different area. Samson, as you know, things didn't go as well as we hoped for. He strayed, actually, away from God. And his weakness was women. He liked women too much. He liked the Palestinians somehow. They were their enemies that he was supposed to save the Israelites from. But God somehow used that. But he fell. And he fell into wrong marriage with the wrong people. He fell into a wrong relationship with Delilah, which brought him down. But after a long and a big detour, he came back to God. And as the Bible says, that in the end of his life, he saved more people than in the beginning of his life. We try to avoid this long detour. Maybe you are in this detour. Maybe you are in this detour. Maybe God has given you a power and a strength in certain areas and give you the signs of consecration. But maybe you lost it over the years. And this is just a reminder that regardless of where you are, maybe you're called. You're given a special grace. The second point in the life of Samson that I want to tell you, that of course Saint Mary avoided, or she was smarter than him, that he got married to the wrong person. And that actually didn't help him. And the relationship with Delilah, as I told you. I saw many people who are called by God to great calling, but they destroyed all of this when they decided to get married to the partner who is not the right person, or he's not a Nazarite. A Nazarite should get married to a Nazarite. But she's a good person. Wonderful. But she's not a Nazarite. She will never understand what a Nazarite means. Could Delilah understand that? Could the Palestinians, women that he married, understand that? No. He was drawn by his lust, and he was drawn, and he was disobedient to God. He had the strength, but he had the weakness too. Like everyone else, he didn't know his weakness, and he didn't work on his weakness. Everyone has a weakness. Everyone. He didn't work on his weakness. He didn't use the power of God and the strength of God to help him overcome this weakness. He didn't listen. He wasn't obedient. Anyways, the message that I want to say here, that marriage is very, very, very important and has to be blessed by parents or at least spiritual guides and spiritual fathers, or else I could lose my consecration completely as a Nazarite to the Lord, because I just got married to a good person, but will never understand what a Nazarite means, will never understand what it means that I want to really dedicate my life to God and I really want to live for Him. Might never understand that, no matter how good they are. Also, Samson lacked in his life, he lacked guidance. He lacked guidance. He lacked accountability. He wasn't accountable to anyone. He wasn't accountable to his parents either. Whose fault is this? Whose fault? Whose fault? Parents, of course. Why? Like, I never thought about it, but actually today, it was very, very weird. When I was actually preparing this, I had a call from Abuna Tadrus Ya'ub, Tadrus Malati. And he told me the secret of this, without knowing, actually. He said, do you have this problem that new families, when they come from Egypt, like the kids, they learn English faster than their parents, and then their parents rely on them in so many things that the kids are in control, and they disrespect their parents, and it's a complete mess. Do you have this problem? I said, yeah, like I see it, but like I didn't think if it's a big thing. And then I was preparing this, and I said, thank Abuna for giving me the answer. The parents, because they had a dream from God and they had a call that this kid is special, they said he's untouchable. Then I don't. He's better than me. How can I discipline him? And this for you, parents. Servants. When I have a kid who's a very, very good kid, I can't say he's better than me, therefore I can discipline him. Maybe he's holier than me. He's more blessed than me. It doesn't mean that he shouldn't be accountable to me. For example, the coach for Michael Jordan, can he say, oh no, he's the greatest of all times and I can't coach him. He should be the coach. No, even him, he needs a coach. Everyone needs a coach. Even the Pope needs a father of confession, and so on. It doesn't mean that I take a confession of someone that I'm better than this one. It doesn't mean that someone is accountable to me that I'm better than this person. Absolutely not. It doesn't mean that he's subject to his parents like Christ, then parents are better than him. No. I could be subject to someone, and then God give me grace. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. By the importance of guidance, the importance of accountability, both ways. If you have to be accountable to someone, or if you hold someone accountable. Very, very, very important. A lot of times I take confessions of people. I don't tell them that. But I know 100% that they are 10 times better than me. A lot of people have pure heart, wonderful people, love God. Can't tell them, sorry, I can't help you because you're 10 times better than me. No, I still hold them accountable. and I still help them by God's grace, and they do a good job actually humbling me. What I want to say in the end is maybe it's a time to renew our vows of consecration to God. Or maybe it's time to start. Maybe it's time to start. Never too late. I always tell you how, you know, one of the biggest missionaries in our time, Abuna Zakaria Butrus, who was preaching to so many Muslims, he started this ministry in the age of 75. He started at 75. It's never too late. Or maybe you're taking a long detour and you need a long retreat to wash away all the distractions and to come back to the early call by God. But God calls us to a special life, to a set-apart life, to a life of consecration, regardless of where you are in your life. Maybe you're in a big mess, like Samson, or worse. But he's calling to renew that. Because the call, God, when he says something, he never goes back. It's still valid. Still there. Just need us to come back to that early call. Again, this would happen only in solitude, retreats, longer retreats. Not the 30 minutes quiet time, or 1 hour or 2 hours, but days in the presence of God until I get the clarity and until all the distractions go away and I say, here I am. I am totally yours. Glory be to God forever and ever. Amen.